Welcome to The Crucible, where the Southern African Institute of Mining and Metallurgy gives you a front row seat to conversations with specialists in the minerals and metals sector. SIAM has well over 100 years experience in and commitment to protecting the professional standards of our industry. Join us now as we discuss the key issues and global initiatives to give you the relevant information needed to make informed decisions, to influence policy that directly affects our sector, and to help our industry grow in an uncertain future.
Welcome, everyone, to The Crucible, our very own SIAM podcast. And I've got the privilege today of speaking to Prof. Gordon Smith. He has such a long bio, I'm going to try and do it justice. Prof. Gordon is a registered professional engineer. He's an honorary life fellow and a past president of SIAM. He holds a whole range of industry, technical and managerial qualifications. He's got extensive experience in business leadership, strategic planning, operational management, business startups, mineral property evaluations, mine planning, mine economics, and even techno-economic evaluations. But I think, Prof. Gordon, the question that I've got for you is, how did you get involved in SIAM? And more specifically, how did you get involved in ESG?
Xiaomiya, greetings. Nice to hear you and see you and be able to engage. As a mining engineering student in the early 80s, I came to know what SIAM is and joined as a member in my final year at university as a student member. And then following graduation, got into the work cycle, worked for a number of years, got a bit of experience in the operational space and applied for membership and was upgraded. And then following a number of years working actually outside of South Africa, but being a member, I was able to take up engagement in South Africa. And being in the country and being close to SIAM, I said, well, what else could I do in this space? And joined the Joburg branch, the Johannesburg branch, and was a member. Then I was secretary for a while, and I was chair for a while, and progressively just kept being engaged through my career with the Institute of Mining Metallurgy. And I think it's a way of putting something back into the industry and growth. A lot of engagement with different people, build networks, understand different viewpoints on challenges the industry is facing. It has been a continuous growth journey. And as you've said, I've been associated a long time, and I am still associated. As you well know, I'm on the council as a past president. And I find, despite my retirement from formal industry occupations, that it now allows me to continue putting something back into the industry over time by being an active member of SIAM. Then the ESG side, I've always been an outdoors person. I'm a bush baby. I grew up on a farm. I love the bush. If I hadn't got into mining, I'd be a game warden or something like that. But what happened was I got bitten by the mining bug and got into mining. And mining, you invariably are in fairly remote areas, and there's a lot to do, or not a lot to do, depending how you view it. There's a lot to do out in the bush, so I spend a lot of time in the bush, and I'm a sort of like a pocket ecologist. I like to know what's going on, grasses, trees, vegetation, geology, insects, birds, mammals, reptiles, whatever it is. So I've always had a passion for the environment, and it became so pressing to try and make people more aware of how important our environment is to us as individuals, but also to the minerals industry. The minerals industry has no future unless we can really resolve a good landing space in terms of environmental, social, and governance dimensions so that the industry is trusted going forward. And that's what I've set out to do, is just create that awareness.
Learning new things every day. I never realized you had this passion. And I love that phrase, bush baby. I think maybe we should start with just saying, what is ESG? You've mentioned environmental, social, and governance frameworks, but maybe also mention, why has this become so important now? What were the main drivers for this to become the focus?
Well, I think one of the things we need to just set out up front is the fact that ESG is an acronym that's used widely, and I think it's poorly defined. It's probably misunderstood by many different people, and it's also interpreted by different interest groups to achieve different objectives. In its core form, the acronym is environmental, social, and governance, corporate governance, actually. And they originally formed the basis for what was termed socially responsible investing, where there would be an emphasis of responsible investing based around companies that were caring for the environment, were very socially aware, and had good governance in place. But subsequent to that, it has evolved into a tool for many organizations with different objectives to bring about better engagement between capitalism, money into a system, and the community. So that's where that one sits. And then why is it so important? I just think the reality of climate change, the fact that we're going to have to progressively decarbonize the global economy is going to create this amazing demand. It's already happening for metals and minerals so far into the future. And as we do that, and there are more and more people in the world, and it's harder and harder to find reasonable mineral deposits, our impact as humans on the globe is going to be greater. And as we do that, there needs to be greater scrutiny of where the metals are coming, where the minerals are coming from, and whether they're being produced and used, not only produced, but and used responsibly. And that is what really ESG should be all about. And it puts demands on the minerals industry, and they're getting complex, but it's essential.
I think, Prof. Gordon, you've now mentioned things like climate change, capitalism, communities. How would an average person in my neighborhood know that globally the mining and minerals industry is taking ESG seriously and focusing on it? What sort of clear and profound initiatives come to mind?
Well, the most evident one in the minerals industry, and it may not be well circulated or shared across the world, is the fact that the International Council on Mining and Metals, which represents the major and significant mining and minerals companies around the world, it's a volunteer organization, has come through with what they call their 10 principles. And they define the 10 principles, define practice in the environmental, social, and governance space for the minerals and metals industry. So those principles are things such as ethical business, decision-making which integrates sustainable development, respecting human rights, effective risk management. I'm just looking at a list here. I can't memorize them all. Health and safety, obviously, which has been really important to the minerals industry for decades. Environmental performance, conservation of biodiversity, responsible production, social, pursuing continual improvement in social performance and contribute to the social, economic, and institutional development of host countries and communities, and then stakeholder engagement. So the principles for good practice have been put out there by the ICMM and adopted deliberately by the major companies and indirectly by many of the smaller companies. But the thing which I think clouds it a bit is each company can choose how to adopt and display their compliance to the principles through the execution of their business strategy. So, for example, one company may choose not to operate in countries where the use of child labor is prevalent, whilst another, for example, totally disinvests from the coal industry. And at the same time, both of them are decarbonizing their operations because they understand the impact of climate change, and they have active social and labor plans. So the interpretation of the actions of the different mining companies needs to be looked at holistically whilst they embrace these 10 principles. So what am I saying in the long run? I think you need to look and see what mining companies are doing, understand the context they're in, and understand their strategy, because invariably they are actually embracing these principles, but they may not immediately resonate with an individual, a person, because they haven't touched their hotspot around what's environmental, what's social, and what's the governance importance.
So also, I think, developing a common language, understanding the strategy, understanding the measurements of that strategy, and if not achieving targets, how do you correct? So I think it goes deeper than just the ESG, like you said, environmental, social, governance. It goes deeper than that. It goes around understanding the strategy and the landscape.
Yeah, and also accepting that a strategy is directional movement over time, is to look at their sustainable development reporting and say, well, this is their company's strategic intent. Are they actually on a journey to get there? Or is this approaching some form of greenwashing? Terrible expression. But you know, are they doing what they say they should be doing and what they are indicating from their strategy? So strategy gives direction. The sustainable reporting and other types of reporting in the public domain then allow you to interpret as to say, well, are they actually heading in the right direction?
I like that, giving the direction. And then also, Prof. Gordon, I really like the idea of clarifying that ESG is not a quick win. It's actually a journey, as you put it. So it's a longer game. If we come back to South Africa specifically, and I'm going to be quite brutal now, we are very dependent on fossil fuels. I think it's still a major industry in South Africa. I know PGMs play a huge role, but for our infrastructure, at least, we are very dependent on fossil fuels. What would you say is the impact of ESG on South Africa right now? How is our own mining, metals, minerals industry experiencing this focus on ESG?
Yeah, it's challenging. You know, I hesitate even in the response. You know, I'm no longer directly active with any of the major mining companies, so I can't speak on the behalf of anybody. But my observation is that it's challenging. You have long-term assets which have a history behind them and a future in front of them over a longer time scale. So whatever we do as an industry, we have to look at it, acknowledge our past, the burdens of the past, because things that have been done leave a footprint, accepting what's happened in the past, understanding it impacts people's perceptions of the company, and impacts the work that has to be done going forward. So you've got to have a long-term view. But in the short term, you've got to deliver. There have to be tangible, strong evidence of work being done that is environmentally responsible, that is socially responsible, and that your governance is such that investors can actually trust what the company is doing. So it's that balance between, yes, acknowledge the past, look to the future, pick up the challenging issues in the different space, deliver against those, and bootstrap going forward. You know, the whole context in South Africa, if you look at it and say, oh, well, let's go to Western Europe. Western Europe, the E in ESG predominates. You know, there's aggressive government regulatory responses that are driving electrification of vehicle drivetrains, so changing it. Motor manufacturers are responding. There are social responses in climate activism. For example, the radical Just Stop Oil crowd, which really puts additional pressure on the oil industry to produce and promote the use of hydrocarbons more responsibly and with greater social conscience. Governance is an expected given, with an emphasis on responsible investing. Whereas in South Africa, the S for social, that's the overriding emphasis, and quite rightly so. The South African context of pervasive poverty, gross unemployment and inequality is so starkly evident in the mining host communities that it underlines the real urgency of addressing the S of ESG. So we as an industry, I don't speak on behalf of the industry, I'm just using that generically, are having a positive impact. Yes, no doubt. Mining industry has made a difference to the millions of people in South Africa over time. But unfortunately, I, speaking for myself, I just don't think it's enough. Our population's growing, unemployment's growing, inequality's growing. So the South African mining industry has a challenge of dealing with the legacy of the past in the social space and building trust going forward into the future around, yes, there's trust on the social impact. Whilst we're doing that, we will address the environmental aspects responsibly as we mature, and I use that respectfully, as a country, into the importance of the environmental dimension going forward. And by the way, whilst that's happening, we're spending your money as an investor responsibly in the governance space. So it's not an easy solution. It's a time-based solution, and it's dealing with a legacy solution to actually build the belief in the minerals industry around ESG in South Africa.
You know, just coming back to that complexity, you've actually painted a picture here. It's a paradox between, as you call it, the burdens of the past, which is a reality, and then the future, because this is a journey. ESG is definitely a journey. It's not a quick fix. And then also the current landscape of what your country is reliant on in terms of infrastructure. So being sustainable in the current, but as you said, looking forward and showing that you are giving direction, you are making a plan. And with that being said, coming back to SIAM now, I think in our own space, as we serve our members and as we serve the mining community, we started our own imperative about a year ago, the ESGS imperative. So I think my question to you would be, why ESGS? Why that second S? Why not just ESG?
I love that question because for me, it just brings it all together. So the S is sustainability. If we implement the intent, the real intent behind ESG, environmental, social, and governance, if we enhance welfare, health, and safety of everybody in the industry and the associated communities, remember, I'll come back to that just now about the associated communities. But whilst we do that and we have regard for environmental impact, we have regard for biodiversity and the sustainability of extraction of critical resources, then we have responsible mining. And if you're responsibly mining, well, it's sustainable. It goes forward into the future. We need to be sustainable. I'm just trying to think of an expression that came, if I remember correctly, from the American Institute of Mining Engineers. They said many years ago, if it's not grown, it's mined. So there's a massive dependency on minerals and metals to sustain the life that we have come to accept. Just the computers I'm talking to, the systems you're using, the cell phones we have, everything. Just look around you, the bricks behind you in the studio, in the wall. These are all mineral minings and metal activities. That plus what we get out of the ground in terms of food are the two realities that we have. We need mining to go forward in the future. We need to extract metals and minerals to sustain society going forward. But we have to do it sustainability. So the S is for sustainability. Let's do it in a way that will actually allow us to do it for my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, and for generations to come, rather than just simply hit and run right now. Sorry, I get
just
a bit passionate
wish. I just wanted to say, I just wish everyone listening to the podcast could just in this moment have seen your face lit up, the passion and the smile. I think there was even a little blush, I have to be honest. And I think with this passion, you even answered my next question because obviously I'm privy to the knowledge. So I've known that SIAM is focusing on the sustainability part of ESG. I just wanted to know what would be the benefits for any South African to adopt this language, the second S, to adopt the sustainability in their DNA, in the language, in the way we work. What would be the benefit for us to add that?
I think, yeah, the benefit to add that is by thinking sustainably, you have to think differently. And it's a very simple model which many people apply, and I like to live by it, is to say that if you think about a problem or challenge or an opportunity in a particular way, you will derive a solution to it. So your thinking impacts your solution, which impacts your actions that come out of it. So if you think about something differently, then obviously you should come up with a different series of outcomes, actions and outcomes. So thinking about things differently produces a different outcome. It's a very simple model, but if you look at something from different approaches, different backgrounds, different passions, different basic skills, the same thing looks different to all the people who engage with it. So your thoughts change the outcome. Change your solution, changes your outcome. So what I firmly believe in is that for the individual, for the professional in SIAM, for everybody, is to actually look at things from a systems thinking perspective and to look at it from an ecosystem perspective. So we don't do anything in this world in isolation. We don't exist in isolation. We have dependency on something else. We're all part of ecosystems, whether they're environmental, social, industrial, financial. Our existence is just embedded in multiple interactive, interdependent systems. So we need to embrace holistic thinking. And that needs to start with the person and flow into the organization. So when we look at a challenge, an opportunity, a threat, whatever you want to call it, a situation, is to look at it and say, how does what I'm doing impact another part of the system? Because I'm just a link in the system. I'm a part of the system. And embracing that holistic viewpoint allows us to build solutions that have a better time impact, because you're now thinking beyond the immediate now. You're saying, well, what I do now, how could it impact something in 1, 5, 10, 15, 20 years? And how would it impact the environment? How would it affect people? So holistic thinking in a systems way is the critical thing.
So, Prof. Gordon, the systems thinking, I want to use a personal example maybe and say, when you see or look at it not only on a time continuum, but spaces, the spaces that your choices influence, you cannot expect a resource, and a human resource is valuable. You cannot expect that person to work from 6 to 6, but their traveling time is 2 hours to work and 2 hours back, because it's not sustainable. And then all of a sudden, you're not only looking at shift work or fatigue shifts, but you start looking at local spend, local employment. You start looking at local housing. It actually starts impacting, like you said, communities far wider than just looking at your own shift schedules. I'm hoping I'm not going to elicit a lot of judgment, but I quite recently started recycling in my own home. And when I started looking at the volumes of recycling per week, I didn't know that that was my footprint until I physically saw it, until it was visualized. And all of a sudden, I started thinking about who recycles ceramics. I started thinking about who's looking and researching smelting plastics and making something from that, like gears, for example, or whatever it might be. I started thinking about other systems, not just my own household and my own footprint. And how do you get involved in those industries? Would you say those are correct examples of thinking not just time, but also space?
Quite definitely. And also acknowledging that virtually everything that we produce has a, we call it waste, but it's not waste. We have a something which is not part of what we decided to produce. It's a byproduct. Those should be inputs to something else. And if we take the viewpoint around, you know, circular economy logic of saying every input could be a byproduct or an output, a waste, so-called waste output from something else, you start building chains of activity, which can then lead to economic activity, which lead to better use of resources, which use, if you do an energy balance, can often be quite useful to actually reduce the total amount of energy, depending at what point you take the so-called waste material out of one system and transport it into another. You're simply not having to reheat and melt particular materials to put it through a second process to be able to transport it while it's still at a certain viscosity based on the temperature. So all of these kind of things come to mind. But the difference there, Zelmer, and you brought it out straight away, is to think about it differently. Because if you think about it differently, then you find a solution which is different to the solution you had before. What was a waste becomes a valuable input product for somebody else. But they've got to see that, understand it, and take it forward. And that requires everybody to think holistically, systemically, if I can call it that. But most importantly, holistically.
I think that's, you mentioned it. Actually, you said, yes, companies, yes, industry, but it starts with the individual. And I think this is a critical and very practical suggestion and recommendation. If you look at your own footprint, just think about how your output could be an input to another industry. I think it's like you said, you might start looking at creating new markets or creating opportunity for growth. I think that's excellent. And bringing that just back to Syme again, we've now created this platform where we educate and have conversations about it like we do now about ESG, about ESGS. For the past year, you being involved in that second S that you're so passionate about, that's making you smile, being involved with Syme's ESGS, what would you say would be the highlights for you of our ESGS imperative for the past year?
I really wouldn't like to sort of highlight any particular event. I don't think that's fair to the organizers or the participants, but it is rather a case of saying we've created an awareness, you know, we've created an awareness around ESG, and one of the key tools for that has in fact been our webinars. They've happened on a fairly regular basis. They've had a range of different topics, and I think we've convened people around that because they've been really good attendance. I think they've been informed, and I hope they've been educated to a certain extent, just opened their eyes to say, look at things differently. Sometimes you're talking to the converted, and other times you've got people who are just curious who actually come there. And in parallel to that, the technical program committee of the SIMM has been incorporating ESG-related topics and broadening the scope of events to ensure that we're talking to sustainability in some way or the other at our conferences, our colloquia, and our journals. So there's been a conscious effort from the SIMM to bring this into who we are and what we do. And that excludes the G for governance that under your leadership has been an important part of SIMM, of making sure that our processes are appropriately, adequately, correctly governed so that our members can have comfort that we are doing what we should be doing. We talk a lot about ENS, but governance creates confidence in organizations that allows further investment of trust and money. People have to trust you. They have to trust the company. They have to believe in it. People have to trust organizations. They have to believe in them to support them. And I think that G is incredibly important in building the trust.
Yeah, I wanted to say it's building the trust. Governance builds trust. Having the baseline and having the boundaries makes us feel safer in a certain space. I think that's a very basic human condition. And I have to concur on the webinars, just off the top of my head, I'm thinking that awareness that you've mentioned and thinking differently. Two webinars come to mind, the Just Transition one, what we've been doing in water and mining. I think even the planning for the tailings event, all of that, just the awareness that it's creating. And I think for me, also the part that we are playing in the global industry and how we differ. When you mentioned what Western Europe is focusing on and what we are focusing on, those webinars just made it more clear for me that the current landscape has a role to play. It will influence how you approach ESGS. And I think with that, keeping to the theme of being practical, we also have decarbonization. We also have the circular economy that you've mentioned, water and mining that I've mentioned. We have quite a few work streams actually in ESGS. So practically, what would be the benefit for someone to join this imperative and to become part of these activities? What would be the benefit for them personally? What would be the benefit for their career and for our industry if they get involved?
Right, I've got three buckets here to talk to. That's good. Personal, career, and industry. at a personal level, I think the greatest thing about it is that life is a continuous journey of learning. We never stop learning from the second we open our eyes until we pass. We learn. So being part of ESG through SIAM, through your companies, you actually learn things. You get to understand stuff. There's no question about it. And learning is satisfying. It's growth. It allows you to, it creates opportunities, which then flows into the second point about career. If through the process of building understanding in the ESG space, you have to build an understanding of a system. It means you then start to better understand the value chain of your company. If you better understand the value chain of the company, you are able to have greater influence. If you understand the value chain, you can gain skills, which allows you to migrate from one area of specialization into a next. So it has to be good for your career, because what it's doing is you're through the learning, you're becoming a richer person, not money, but a greater part of you is developing from the mental side of understanding things, which means if you understand things, you can make better informed decisions as to what you should be learning, what you could be learning, and where you could be going in the company, out of the company, in the industry, in an adjacent industry. So it has to be good for your career. And then the third point about industry is, bluntly, if we as an industry don't sort out our social responsibility, our environmental responsibility, we're going to have such adverse pressure on us that it's just going to become more and more difficult to produce what is critical to the future going forward. Trust, I mentioned it earlier. The world has to trust mining, because if it's not grown, it's mined. We've got a place going forward. We impact a much smaller proportion of the Earth's surface than agriculture does. But agriculture, monoculture destroys biodiversity. And we've got hundreds of thousands, I don't even know the number, of square kilometers of land which has been converted to cropping. So that's fine. And for cattle and other livestock, that's fine, because we need to eat. People accept the environmental destruction because we have to eat. How do we get the world to trust us as an industry that we need to mine to live? And we will mine responsibly. We'll minimize our impact. We'll socially, environmentally, and we'll spend your investment money responsibly into doing that. We have to rebuild trust. So personal, yes, it's good for you. You learn. Career, it's great for you. It creates options. From an industry perspective, it says we're laying down the foundation for successful mining for the next 100, 200, 300 years. Who knows?
I just want to focus on that one statement, because I think it's profound. It's a narrative. It's storytelling. And I think storytelling is fundamental to human life. The comment that you made about the story around agriculture and the story around mining, if it's not grown, it's mined, but the storytelling and the narrative around agriculture is so much more positive. And I think it's only recently that I became aware of, I think it's called the Dust Bowl in America, that, you know, by cropping, as you called it, they destroyed the bluegrass that was actually giving integrity to soil. And as they were doing that, they were creating these huge dust storms and, you know, increasing lung diseases. And it just caused a major migration and economic crisis for America. And that story is not as clear. That narrative is not as clear. And maybe an unfair question, maybe putting you a little bit on the spot, Prof. Gordon, but how do we make a narrative positive? How do we create positive storytelling around mining?
Yeah, you got me stopping and thinking for a second there. It is challenging because there's that legacy I was talking of earlier of distrust for mining companies because of some of the terrible injustices that have been done in the past. So it's not going to be easy, but I think it's a continuous narrative and engagement with people to be able to demonstrate that what is being done responsibly. It's being done sustainably. It's being done to minimize impact. And it needs to not be technical solutions. It needs to affect people. That's the S in the ESG. The communities that mines operate in need to be their biggest champions. They need to be their biggest defenders. They need to say, we want this mine here because it's changed the quality of our life. It's changed the health of our community. It's changed the quality of the air. Let's turn it to a positive. It's changed the quality of the air instead of degrading the air. All of these aspects, so people want you there, just like they just quite easily will drive down past rows and rows, kilometers and kilometers of maize growing on the side of the road. They've got to want us there. I don't have the answer. I'm not a sociologist. Remember, I'm a mining engineer. But it's to get people on board, for people to trust us, to want us, to work with us.
I think you've said it. I think what comes to mind is what you said about showing or visualizing. You know, that's the thing. It's visualizing results, that reporting that you were talking about. And I'm hoping that SIAM, and SIAM is nothing more than our members. So I'm hoping that SIAM and its members and its stakeholders will help us to visualize the progress that we are making with ESGs. And I think just coming back to talking about a journey, if we look at safety, for example, in mining, I think the first time that there was really a major safety movement, it was in the UK coal mines, and it was in the 1840s. And I don't think people realized that safety wasn't a once-off. It wasn't a quick activity. It was always, and still is, a journey. It's been a journey for almost the past 100 years. How do we go about practically? If you could give me a step-by-step guide, we are engineers after all. How do we make ESGs a fundamental part of our DNA, just as safety is now? What would the practical advice be that you give an individual in a company, in our industry, to just make ESGs part of our DNA?
Again, that's a big task, and it really is, and it is a long journey, no doubt about that. You think how long it's taken us to get to a vaguely acceptable safety record across the industry. In fact, it's not acceptable. There must be no harm to any person, any time. Anybody who comes to work needs to know they're going to go home intact to their loved ones every day. It's a challenge, but I think that the unlocking of the success, relative success, the progressive success of safety programs around the world, including South Africa, has been around two things. One is awareness, and the second is intolerance, be totally intolerant. So awareness of what is not acceptable, awareness of what's not acceptable. So it's not acceptable to come to work from a safety perspective and be injured. But to be injured, how do you define the injury? It can be minor injury. It can be a lost shift in injury. So it's putting in place the awareness around environmental, social. Governance is pretty tight because of the financial controls of the company. So the governance less so at this stage. So what are the sensitive touch points around the environment and social for the mine in that context of that community? What is not acceptable? To take the time in a particular context to clearly define to all people who work into the mine property of all sorts that what is not acceptable, and then for management to be absolutely intolerant of any breaches. And that's what we do with safety. It's become a way of life, that zero tolerance. How do we get to zero tolerance around environmental and social issues? Now, the environmental and social issues are much harder to define because social involves people and how people feel about things. So the engagement between an organization and the community that it operates in around what are the issues that are critical touch points is important. And then you become intolerant around anything that impacts those. Similarly, from an environmental perspective, what's important environmentally in a pristine biodiversity area that I currently live in is completely different to a light industrial area in Rustenburg, for example. So what is to be totally intolerant about in the environmental space according to the context? So both the E and the S, intolerance, is an awareness which is contextual. And once you've defined that contextual awareness is to ensure that everybody in the company, starting with senior management, cascading down, is totally intolerant of any breaches of what has been defined. It's setting the rules.
The boundaries that we talked about.
That's a good point. Yeah, boundaries. Yeah. That's a good word.
There's actually three steps in what you just said, if we want to make it very practical. And I want to add a fourth one. But I think the awareness, yes, I wasn't aware of any of this until Syme started this imperative. You know about it. You know it's going on globally. But like you said, you're not aware in your current context what is, for example, intolerable, what should not be tolerated. So a second step, defining what's not to be tolerated. And I think thirdly, what you also said in terms of definitions and a common language within your context. And even if you look at it from a country perspective, your definitions and common language might differ because your focus is different. So for us socially and for Western Europe, for example, environmentally, those definitions and common language might not be the same. And then the fourth point that I want to add that I think will bring us to a nice close of this conversation is please join SIAM. Please get involved with the ESGS imperative. I mean, Prof. Gordon, if I can use a personal story just to bring us to the end, I have a little girl at home that's now challenging everything. We've reached that preteen stage. And she asked me, why does she have to do homework? And I said to her, because in this household, we value learning and we value knowledge. And then obviously she wants to know why. Why do we value learning and knowledge? And I explained to her that that will give you the courage to show up in any difficult situation. You will be able to, as you put it, Prof. Gordon, engage with the difficulties and the complexities of the situation. So I think SIAM is the perfect platform to come and do your homework, to come and get that knowledge so that you will be able, Prof. Gordon, as you said, anywhere in the world to engage in this fairly difficult and complex conversation. So thank you for that, for your guidance. Thank you for teaching me today. I really appreciate your views on trust, on relationships, on boundaries, and I think basically just understanding what your impact is, not only on time, but also in different spaces. Thank you very much for this conversation.
My pleasure, an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Please note that the facts and opinions expressed are those of the individual and do not reflect the position of SIAM or the corporate institution.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.